have a business or service you'd like our listeners to know about? Consider becoming an underwriter of WGXC 90.7 FM. Underwriting can be customized to fit your promotional budget and lets you spread awareness of your work to a wide audience, all while supporting hands-on radio in Greene and Columbia counties. To learn more, visit wgxc.org/underwriting or call 518-697-7400.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Catskill Community Acupuncture, offering community acupuncture in a group setting, as well as private acupuncture treatments with classical Chinese medicine consultations. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 3 to 6:30 p.m. and located at 400 Main Street in Catskill.
For more information, Chinese call medicine
518-303-6399 or visit www.catskillacupuncture.com.
This is Damian Katera. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. The airwaves as a creative medium.
We'll never be the same. Hi, this is Dave Canyon from Dumbing It Down with Bob, and you are tuned into WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
From the WGXC studios in Hudson, New York, it's Dumbing It Down with Bob. Filling in for Bob tonight is Dave Canyon. This is Mike Crofo, inviting you to join Dave and his guests from Las Vegas, author and comedian Linda Liu, and from Albany, New York, comedian and radio show host Ethan Ullman. And now...
Everybody, welcome to Dumbing It Down with Bob. Filling in for Bob tonight is me, Dave Canyon. Thank you, microphone. I appreciate you helping me out this week with my show intros and my station IDs and all that good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WGXC 90.7, WGXC.org here in Hudson, Acre, New York. This is going to be a weekly This will be a 2-hour show tonight, but it'll be once every blue moon. They got me scheduled on the fifth Sunday of the month. So I hope you enjoy tonight, because you're going to have to hold on to this show for a couple of months before my next show. But anyway, tonight we have a interesting show for you, a good show, a great show, is the best I can come up with, and you're going to enjoy it. In the second hour, we will have Ethan Ullman from WCDB-FM Radio, Alternative to Sleeping. He's also a comedian, and he's a talk show host, so he'll be here in the second hour. In the first hour, we'll be talking to, in minutes, just a matter of minutes, we'll be talking to Linda Liu. She is a Albany native. She's a Vegas comic, and she's an author of a book called Bastard Husband, A Love Story. And I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation talking with her, discussing her comedy career and her divorce and what's happening now. So, and it's a big deal for me because I am not much of a reader, and I've actually read pretty much the whole book. I'm not going to lie. I pretty much read like 2/3 of the book. And if I wasn't busy with every other idiotic thing in the world involved with radio promotion, or the show promotion, like texting and tweeting and all the nonsense that I've been doing for the whole week, I would have finished the book, not to mention Easter. So by the way, before we get going, happy Easter, everybody. And for what's left of Passover, happy Passover to everybody. I hope you guys had a great week. I was on vacation all week, and it's great to have vacation. I don't take vacation often, and when I do take vacation, I don't usually go anywhere, just like this week. Although I did go to New York City, and I actually got to go out, have a couple of drinks, some fantastic food. I went to the Eastville Comedy Club, which I very rarely, if never, do, to go see professional comics. I usually just see open micers. But it was great. Went down, saw, what's his name? Judah Friedlander. Most of you know, the world champ, Judah Friedlander. And I saw a woman who opened the show. Her name was Carmen Lynch. What a big surprise. She was fantastic. She actually had appeared on Letterman. So... I saw that, and that was great. That was then we had Easter dinner on Saturday, a little bit of Passover dinner. We went to somebody else's house who was celebrating Easter, and I guess we bought fake arugula. That's not a fantastic kosher treat, and you shouldn't tell people you're bringing fake arugula. But I guess we got it at Chopper, and we told people it was fake arugula. I don't even know if it's fake, and I don't know how you would authenticate arugula. So that's what we did. Before I get going, I just want to thank everybody here at WGXC I'm here 2 years into this. I'm part of this new programmer's blood that they got, this new lineup, this whole new thing that they got going on. But it's a lot of new, but it's a lot of the same of the old. You know, it's still WGXC.org. It's still an eclectic lineup. You just heard the show before me. I think after me, there's the Irish show. So there's an incredible lineup here, and I'm very proud to be a part of that, because what I have is a talk show. I won't be taking phone calls tonight, except for the guests, because of the fact we haven't perfected that yet, and I'm not going to play around with something I can't perfect. So I'm going to have the best guests I can have, and we'll interview them, and you can tweet me. How's that? You can tweet me, and if I remember correctly, you should go on Twitter. And anybody who knows has Twitter, you know this already. I'm the only one that doesn't know this stuff. I just found this out like an hour ago. Go on Twitter and you tweet whatever you want to tweet, a question. It'll be to Linda Liu, author of Bastard Husband, for the first hour, the second hour, if we ever get to it, will be Ethan Ullman. So in the tweet, you want to end it off with hashtag, for those of you who don't know, I guess that's the pound sign, and hashtag dumb with Bob, D-U-M-B with Bob. And if you do that, I guess somehow I'll see the question here on my laptop, and then we'll try to have that sort of interaction. Let's try for that. Meanwhile, I'm not even logged into Twitter yet, and I should have done that before, but I didn't, so I'll have to figure that out. So here's what we're going to do. I explained, hashtag dumb with Bob, and we have two guests. It's a two-hour show. Let me see if I can get a little music up here so we can get Linda. There we go. Let me see. If I click on that, I like that. I'm going to walk you guys through it. Everything I'm doing, I'm going to walk you guys through it. And let's put this up. And folks, I'm going to play a little music for you. I think you'll enjoy it. For those of you who are men and women of my age and you're from New York, I think you'll recognize this tune. If not, it's about 3 minutes and 37 seconds of good music. I think you'll like it. So let me just do one thing here. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right. Wait, no, I'm talking too soon. Talking too soon. Here we go. You gotta wait. You gotta wait for this stuff to download, folks. I love this spinning thing. You're gonna hear it. There you go. All right. Let me see now. I'm on the air. I should be. I see my levels. Hey, let me take myself. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Well, I was going to get Linda on the... Oh, she's got the answer machine. I'm going to have to play another song for you guys, folks, because I'm having a little problem getting Linda on the air. It says here, line two. I'm pressing the buttons I'm supposed to be pressing. No other buttons here are the right ones. So let's get you another song, folks, and let's see. Let's see. I love this. It's a lot of fun learning how to do all this while I'm on the air. But that was Focus, by the way. If anybody remember Focus? That was the old WPLJ theme song. Here's some more Focus. Let's see. Linda, you there?
I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hold on one second. All right, excellent. Good. I figured it out. It's good. It's all trial by error, folks. That's one of the good things about WGXC. You don't have to come here with thousands of years of experience. You just come here and you figure this all out. So, we are ready to interview our guest, Linda Liu from Bastard Husband of Love Story. She's from Albany. And just give me one second here. And we're going to introduce Linda Liu to the show. It's always very smooth when we do this. Where is my stuff? Oh, it's not here. I promised her I'd have something really great for her. Why isn't it here? Oh, Phil. Microphone. Where did you put it? Station ID. Promo. Oh, there it is. Boop. He did it. I'm the one that's messing up. Give me one second, folks.
Well, Dave, she's originally from Albany, New York. She lived in Las Vegas since 2003. She's an author, a speaker, a motivational humorist, and comedian, as well as a wife, mother, stepmother, and grandmother. She's 55 years old and damn proud of it. She loves to help and inspire others, and most of all, she lives to have fun. Her motto is love every minute. And now, author of Bastard Husband, a Love Story, here's Linda Liu.
Linda.
Hey, Dave.
How you like that?
Thank you.
People are applauding. You got the big intro from Mike Crophone. Isn't he a professional? Doesn't it sound great, Microphone? I'm not pronouncing it right. It's Mike Crophone. You ever hear of Mike?
I don't know that particular Mike. I don't think so.
Okay, but anyway, but he did a great job. Thank you. And that was the. I told you it was going to be a special. That was my hint. Special just for you. And that was actually more of a, I think, a newlywed game reference than it was a dating game reference. Do you remember that theme song?
I sure do. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, Linda Liu, thank you very much for coming on the air. It's great. It's a great thrill.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Listen, it's very rare that I can say we have a very interesting, I guess, origin, you and I, right? Do you remember? Do you remember how we first sort of met?
Well, I'm thinking it was at a comedy club in Albany, right?
Yeah, it was at the Log Tavern. But you are like the only person in the world that I can say that I met you. I met a person because her sister took a picture of me topless.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I can't say that about anybody else on this planet. So
unfortunately, I can say that about a lot of people who have taken pictures of me topless. So, yeah, especially down in New Orleans. But
right. Well, that's a great icebreaker right there. Sure. Once you're topless, you're friends. I would think so. Yeah, so I'm on stage, and I don't know what happened. I just ended up with my shirt off. Oh, I was doing a bit that was I did it a couple of years. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But it was a special. I saved it for Christmas. It was called "Guess What's Wrong with This Hat." You remember that?
No.
Did it leave such a profound what?
It's a repressed memory.
It should be. Well, it would have been totally repressed, but your sister, Lori, God bless her, decides to take a picture of me. I don't know how she was just, boom, ready. But, although I was up, I think I was topless for a couple of minutes. It was actually a very liberating moment in my life. But, she took that picture, and I yelled at her. I said, don't put that on Facebook without my permission. And she laughed because, she knew that I wasn't serious, and I actually enjoyed it. I should have at least just started posing. But that was how we met. She took that picture, and then before you know it, we were talking, and we've known each other ever since. And that was about, 4 or 5 years ago?
I want to say that, yeah. I want to say it was probably 2009.
Right.
And, by the way, I'm topless right now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I do all the radio interviews topless and some of the TV, the cable TV interviews topless too. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's very smart of you. I was going to suggest that, but I appreciate that you just did it on your own. I would go topless myself right now, but it's a little chilly here in Hudson, New York. You're in Vegas, so you really have the advantage of not needing any clothes.
Now,
are you? By the way, you're topless. Are you alone?
I am now. Yeah.
Oh, you are now. No, this now just turned into a whole different show, and I think my wife is listening, who, by the way, is a huge fan of yours, and she loves your book, and as well as a lot of people do, because your book has been doing very well.
It has.
Okay.
It's on Kindle. I put it on Kindle over a year ago, and that was just a major breakthrough for it. People are really willing to spend $2.99 for a book, which is awesome.
So, wow.
It's like the price of a beer at happy hour.
Right.
And it is available on Amazon.com. And it really is. It's only $2.99 on Kindle.
Excellent.
And I found that, once I got it on Kindle, it just like took off and has a mind of its own now. So it's been great.
Excellent. Well, I tell you what. I've already admitted to you many times that I am not a reader. I'm not a reader. I'm a horrible reader. And hold on. Somebody's telling me it's hard to hear you. I hear a hiss. Do you hear a hiss?
I don't.
Okay, well, I hear the hiss. But anyway, that's usually, it's funny. You mentioned in the book that you were used to work in, Westchester or Connecticut for a big company, and you would listen to Stern. And he would always complain about all these sounds he would hear. And people say, I would never hear what he would hear, but he would always hear it. So I do hear a hiss, and somebody just texted me that it was hard to hear you. So I'm raising my volume, whatever you could do to raise your volume. But I think you sound fine, a lot better than the other day when you and I were in rehearsal.
Okay. I have a really good mic here at home, so I'm hoping that the sound is okay. It's hard for me to tell.
Right. Well,
maybe
if you were wearing a shirt, then things would be a lot better. But the fact that you're topless, I can't control what's going on over here. You're 3,000 miles away.
That's right.
All right. So let's get right to it. So it's a great book, and I'm not just saying that because you're a guest. If I didn't think it was a great book, I would actually, believe it or not, I would have the guts to be honest with you. I would say, listen, this book is very interesting, but I wouldn't say it's a great book. But this book is interesting, and it's a great book because it's making me laugh, and I'm a man, and this is not a girly book, though, right?
It's not really. When I wrote it, my target audience was women, and particularly women over 40, because it is a story about starting over. It's not entirely about my ex-husband, but it really is a love story about him, but a love story for myself as well, because I'd love myself enough to get past him and start over and just have a whole different life. So when I wrote it with women in mind, and particularly over 40, because it's a little harder for women the older we get to have that confidence to want to start over and do new things. But as it turned out, men really like it. And I hear from men all the time. And I don't know if it's because there's a lot of swearing in it. There's not any sex in it at all. So. And there's no pictures of me topless, though. I don't get it. But men do really like it.
Yeah. I'm finding it easy to read. I could read. I've seen a lot of I've been married now for almost years. And, like 20 almost 30 years. And I've seen a lot of girly movies, starting with, I could tell you the first one was Room with a View, I think it was. I forgot the name of that British actress, but I didn't like. But over the years, since I've been married, I've watched all these movies from a woman's point of view. But a lot of times for me, it's not so girly. A lot of these films are very, even The Notebook, let's say. I saw The Notebook. How do you like that? Am I a Renaissance man or what? And and I can cry during that, and I can feel their pain. And your book is like that. Your book is not sappy at all, like The Notebook. No, not at all. But you're not a sappy person. That's the deal here. You're actually quite funny, not just as a comedian, but in your everyday life. I was talking to you earlier today. I'm so nervous now having any sort of relationship with you because you have these thoughts like I do. You walk around and you can shake somebody's hand, although I'm seeing that you're not really fond of that sort of contact because of the germs and all that, when you go to the church. But you have these aside thoughts like, oh, my God, what's wrong with her hair? Or, this person smells, or, the hippie guy that you met at the DMV. There's all these people that you meet in the book, and you have all these thoughts on the aside in your head while you're being so wonderfully gracious to everybody. You are that type of person. So I relate to that because I do that constantly, and I think a lot of people do, right?
Well, I think it's part of being a comedian as well, where we always have to observe what's going on around us because everything is an opportunity for humor. And I really love people, and so when I see these different types of people and their quirkiness, I note it and I like it. I mean, I'm not being judgmental about them all the time. I mean, sometimes definitely I'll admit to it, but I mean, that's what makes the world go round, so it's pretty cool. But I think that that's what comedians do, and I think that's when, I just started doing comedy in my 40s. I was 46 the first time I got on stage, and actually that's what the book is about. It's about moving to Las Vegas by myself after my second divorce. I mean, nobody wants to be divorced once, much less twice. And, when I came here, I had no job, no friends. I was heartbroken. I loved my husband. But, after, let's say, 12 or 13 beers, he became a little bit too much to handle. So
wow.
It was
tough. After he had 12 or 13 beers.
After he,
right.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to that. Hold on 1 second here. All right.
Okay.
First of all, and I got all these notes because this is proof that I read the book. I actually have like a page and a half of notes. I'm going to say this 1,000 times. It's a big deal for me to read. I mean, I fall asleep. I'm like one of those fainting goats. You know those fainting goats? They just walk and, they faint. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I've never seen one.
they're hilarious. There's YouTube videos and everything. I don't know if they're goats or sheep, whatever they are. They walk like 5 feet and, they're out. They pass out. And then they get up and they go back, But when I read, I don't get back up. I read like a paragraph or two, then I'm out. And then, 6 hours later, I'm like, what happened to me? It's like drugs to me. This is why I became the incredible non-success that I am today. But your book was easy to read. So it's better when I sit up because I sit on the couch and the bed, I fall asleep. All right, so let me ask you some questions here. One of the things you mentioned, your book is interesting also, by the way, because you don't really go in a particular order, do you? You kind of jump around a little bit. Is that accurate?
Well, what's interesting isn't. It's a 1 year period of my life.
Oh, really?
From June 1st, 2003 to June 1st, 2004. Hmm. So in a way, it does go chronologically, but I had to weave in a lot of backstory about my life before I moved out west, about my life back in Albany with, my first husband and having kids. And and that's always a challenge for a memoir writer is to make it. A memoir takes a one period of your life, but you have to kind of weave in a lot of backstory as well.
Right.
So that's why it doesn't always seem like it's chronological, but it actually is.
Right. Well, I'm a big dope, so I was like, wait a minute, what happened? We were just like, 1 minute we're here, the next minute we're in Buffalo, the next minute I was like, whoa. So I had to reread. So I've actually read your book like 2 or 3 times, actually, but once again, it's an easy read, but so I'm just not used to it. So there was one mention in the book about something, and then I was like, wait a minute, what is she talking about? And I had to go back 5 pages to investigate, and then 5 pages later, you sort of mentioned, the book that, we'll talk about it later, about that book that you found in your bastard husband's,
Right.
So we'll get to that. That was crazy for me. My wife and I like, wait a minute, because she read the book, so I had to go to her. I was like, where's this book she's talking about? And then you mentioned it. So it was a little confusing to me, but that's okay. It's not a critique. I'm not here to critique you. Let me ask you a question. Are you still You mentioned, it's so funny because even at your age, I think you still do it. You still give people the finger?
Yeah, I do. I mean, behind their backs. Not as
Always.
Often.
Okay.
Not as often. I think people are behaving much more better these days. But
They're behaving better? They're behaving better. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the book, I think it's page one, I give my ex-husband the finger behind
right away. Right away. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I didn't write down a lot of things. I wrote down the page number, but I didn't. But you do it right away, and you do it a couple of times at the beginning of the book. Is it intentional in this book that you never actually mention his name?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't mention his name because I talk about an alcohol problem, and, you know, I don't want to expose him. I don't want people to know who he is, but I do have his blessing on it. He's read it. He loves it. And we actually, now that we've been divorced 10 years now,
okay.
And the book has been out 4 years, and I hear from him every once in a while. Usually it's about something related to yoga, because we both loved yoga.
Right.
And if he hears about something in the news or something. So right. we've had a really good relationship. He did go back to New Zealand.
Right.
So it's easy to have a good relationship when you're right. in different hemispheres.
Right, right, exactly. And you've moved on, too. And we'll get to that. And now he has all his magazine subscriptions, so...
The Economist.
Yeah, okay. I just want to prove, I always have to prove to you and to everybody else that I've read your book. So I'm going to do a little inside jokes, which won't be funny to anybody else unless they read the book. But I know, it's a big deal to me. I can't believe I'm going to finish this book. I'm like two-thirds through. You got to imagine, if I didn't get busy with all this crazy, I'm on vacation. You think I would have finished this? And I could have finished this probably in about a day or two. It is that easy of a read. It's very enjoyable. I'm not going to say you've dumbed it down for everybody, but you know, it's that simple, and it's very. It kind of reads. I could see this as a sitcom. I could see it as a movie. Do you see that at all when you write it, when you live your life, that somebody should be playing you like somewhere, and people should be enjoying it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of people can relate to it, and
I
think that it is unique being my age. And the book takes place during, I'm 46 years old.
Right.
Now I'm 55.
Right.
And it's kind of unique to see somebody who's kind of making the scene in Las Vegas at that age and, you
right.
know, doing stand-up comedy for the first time. And
right.
There's a lot of contradictions that I think people would find interesting. I have a scene where... It took me forever to find a decent job here in Las Vegas.
Yes.
I mean, unless you're a cocktail waitress or a valet parker, and I'm a little old, a little long in the tooth to be a cocktail waitress. But
I don't think so, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about the things you wear. I mean, you're very candid about that. And tonight you're candid about what you're not wearing. So
yeah, I know.
Why would you think you're too old for that? Is that just Vegas standards or your standards?
No, actually, no. I don't actually feel I am too old to be a cocktail waitress.
No.
I mean, I'm still in good shape and everything, but there's a lot of younger women who would probably
sure.
make a lot more in tips.
Yeah.
But when I first came here, I became a substitute teacher just to get some money coming in. And I have one of my favorite parts of the book is when I talk about being a substitute teacher. And I'm not really a kid person. And
no.
the kids all love me. And if they only knew, like, I'd give them homework to do or, you know, seat work to do. And then I'd be at the front of the class sitting there writing, like, really dirty jokes for my stand-up routine. And I just thought, if they
wow.
ever knew.
You're sitting there writing, and I didn't know. I'm at the part where your friend tells you about the job, and you say, "Well, $90 a day." You know that was
yeah.
that's minuscule compared to what you were doing, you know, previous to that.
That's
but
right.
All right, so that's interesting. So you wrote some of your original material when you were substitute teaching. That's fantastic.
And really dirty stuff. I felt a little bad, but you know they were busy, and I thought I'm just going to take this time to work on my own stuff.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
In the front of the room laughing, and the kids just thought I was so cool.
Did you tell them your Moby Dick joke or the other joke,
no.
the Carson jokes? All right, because I did read that you fancied yourself being the young daughter on Bonanza.
Oh, yeah.
And you wrote that letter, and they sent you a picture, an autographed picture. Was it, like, really autographed, or was it, like, a, you know, standard, you know, this is what we sell at the gift shop?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I just always had a fascination without being out west. And when
yes.
I was little, I wrote a letter to Bonanza saying they should write in a part for a younger sister.
Right. When you write that letter, you write it like you send it to Santa, or did you actually like have an address?
I wrote it, and I think my grandfather sent it in to the TV station,
That's
the local
fantastic.
TV station, which would be Channel 6 up in Albany.
Right. Oh, really? Oh, you sent it to Channel 6. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So so Liz Streeter answered the letter, and she mailed it back to you. Okay. I don't even know if that she's on Channel 6. That name just sounds familiar to me. All right. So, and then at age 9, you're sending jokes to Carson, again, via your grandfather?
No, that I sent on my own, and I collected my funniest jokes. And the thing is, I was a very quiet and shy child, but I just had some jokes that cracked me up, and so I sent them to Johnny Carson, and I got a form letter saying that they wouldn't accept any unsolicited material, and it broke my heart. But we know where Johnny is now, and I'm on the radio with you, so there.
Yeah, so there. And by the way, at age 9, did you know what unsolicited meant? Because I almost still don't know what it means. But I understand.
No.
Okay. But that's great. You got a letter. That's fantastic. I mean, you even tried. But you didn't think then that you'd be a comedian at all.
No.
But your father, I read later in the book, was a funny guy.
I come from a family where everybody's a comedian.
Yeah.
And I was not particularly funny. It's funny because when I go back to Albany, people will say to me, that people I knew from high school, they'll say, well, Linda, you know, I don't remember you as being really funny, but the way I got into comedy is my background is in corporate training and technical writing, which are two things that really work well in comedy. The training gave me stage presence, and technical writing, I was used to writing succinctly, and coming from a funny family, the way I started doing comedy, I was so miserable here by myself. I used to say, you know, I was so miserable even Jesus would cross the street if he saw me coming.
Right.
And I went to an open mic week after week just to force myself to get out of the house. And I would look at the other comics and I thought, well, geez, you know, I've been in front of people training and making them laugh during the training, and I know I can write material. So I just signed up, and, you know, my first time on stage, I was 46 years old.
Wow.
And I only wanted to do it once. And I thought, this will be just a personal victory. I'm never going to do it again.
Right.
I mean, I broke out in hives, and it was awful. I was so nervous.
Yeah, you have a blotchy neck issue.
I do.
See, I'm reading the book. I read the book. I don't know what that's like. I'd like to see you do that if you could. When next time I see you, if you could just blotch your neck up a little bit. I just was curious. I don't know what that's like, but I'd like to see that. I don't know why. Out of all the things I read, that's really the one thing I want to see you do. But it's not. I'm sure it's not a pleasant thing. I'm only kidding. But all right. So, but yeah, he's a funny guy. And what was it? If somebody would die. What would he do if somebody would die in the family? Do you remember?
Oh, I do remember this. When my great uncle died, my father's uncle, my father called his sister and said, Joyce, how many uncles do we have? And she said, why one? And he said, wrong. I just came from a family where nothing was off limits. We
right.
could make a joke about funerals, my grandmother's mastectomy, I mean, anything. Nothing was off limits.
Wow, that's great. That's great. And you see him do it, and he was a bus driver too, and he did funny as being a bus driver up in Albany. You would think he'd want everybody to ride the bus, but he didn't. And he had a little. What was his thing that he said about, you know, why he, you know, what he does?
He loved being a bus driver, and he used to say, "I don't work. I bring other people to work."
Right.
And he used to bus with people. Like people would come on the bus, and he'd be like, you know. Think about getting a car. Everybody has a car these days.
That's great.
Really funny.
That's
really.
Great. So he had a pleasant attitude for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm reading in the book, and I don't want to really, I'm not, you know, trying to pick on you or anything, but, you know, your mom had, you know, I guess, some issues, because apparently, if you're serious, there was a long time she didn't leave the house.
My mother had agoraphobia for about 10 years at least while I was growing up. And people with agoraphobia, they really do not leave the house.
Right.
It's good and bad because, you know, back then you could hit your kids. So when she'd come after us with the belt, well, we would run outside, you know. Fresh air was like kryptonite to her. She wasn't going to go anywhere.
She wasn't crossing that line. She wasn't crossing that threshold. She wouldn't leave. I mean, really, the shopping, who did all the shopping for the food?
My father. My father brought us school shopping, and my mother would force herself to get out of the house to go to, like, my ballet recitals or any school functions, but for the most part, you know, she was really homebound.
Wow.
And it was when she was in her 40s, she started going to a support group and just, you know, slowly got out. She ended up going back to school. She ended up getting her driver's license, getting a part-time job, and she became an accountant. And now she moved to Idaho.
Uh-oh. I think we just lost Linda. But she will call right back. Yep, I think we just lost Linda. That was a good connection there for a while. So Linda is going to call back. Oh, I think it's her click. So that means we lost her. But she got Skype, folks. So, and she's got this microphone. That was her. She'll call right back, and we'll get her right on. I'll probably do it while, let me see, if I hear the phone ring, I will play some music. How about that? So this way you don't have to listen to me get her on the air. But, I got to shut this off. All right, so so far we're up to her mom. We talked about her mom, her dad, and some of her book, that the fact that she used to give the finger. We now know that she is actually doing this interview topless, hopefully in her apartment, not by the pool. And we're going to get to some of the serious stuff here as soon as she gets back in. If you need any more information, check out Vegas Linda Lou. Vegas Linda Lou. It is Bastard Husband, a love story. And for those of you who are like me that dread reading, let me just tell you right now, there are 260 pages. The font is not too teeny. These are things that are important to me, so I'm assuming they're important to you if you're not a reader. If you are a reader, then you're fine with the whole thing. But if you're not a reader, you don't want to, like, get into a long book you're not going to finish. So 260 pages. The font is pretty decent. I am kind of surprised that there are absolutely zero pictures of this book. Most books have pictures, and I love books with pictures because even if I get bored with what I'm reading, which I didn't in this book, I can go to the pictures. But there's a picture of her on the back, and that's about it. So there's some good stuff in here. You'll laugh. You might cry. I'm assuming the women will cry a little bit because they'll relate to this deeply. I related to a lot of it, but I didn't cry. But you should check it out. Linda Lou, Bastard Husband. Let me just rattle off some stuff here while she's calling us back. I don't see the phone ringing. Let me see. Is she still there? You still there? No, she's gone. All right. Let me see. Well, we learned that she used to give the finger a lot. She just started comedy at 46, and now she's 55, and she's been doing it. I met her in Albany. I was on stage. I went topless, and hold on 1 second. There she is. Let's try this. No. There you go. Oh, there it goes. On the air, we're doing this. Hello, Dave here. All right, hold on 1 second. Right on the air, we're going to do. There we go. Let's see if I did this right. All right. You there?
I'm here.
Oh, there you go. Excellent. Fantastic. That was good. Your internet went down?
Yeah, of all times. My internet crashes. It's not up yet.
Okay. Oh, so what are you calling me on now?
I'm on my cell phone.
Okay. Well, it sounds good. We're fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
All right. Let's get to the serious stuff here. So I'm reading on page 8 here. I don't know why. I'll give the page numbers. You actually, there was one night it got so bad. First of all, you were married to... I can say his name because you mentioned in the book, Chris.
My first husband, yes,
oh, okay.
Chris.
Yeah, it's in the book. That's the only way. I won't mention any names because I don't know any names other than what you wrote. But you were married for what, 19 years?
We were married for 16 together
years.
For 18. Yep.
Okay, and you had two kids.
Yes.
This entire...
And if I could give them a plug,
yes.
They are the Blackwell Sinners. They're both singer-songwriters, and they perform... It's Chris Blackwell and Courtney Blackwell. But they both perform with their father, Chris Blackwell, Lefty we call him, as the Blackwell Sinners. And they perform all over town.
Oh, really? Oh, it's mm-hmm. father, son, and daughter.
Yes.
That's I didn't know that. That's great. And do they have a gig coming up anytime soon you want to plug?
I don't think they do. Okay. I don't think they do
Facebook,
right now.
Facebook, anything?
Facebook, Blackwell Sinners.
Blackwell Sinners. Okay. And all right. So, yeah, because your husband was a musician. And and then you had the two kids, and you guys had this. I love this whole thing about how you rig the shower, and you guys. But also, what's interesting? There's so many interesting things. But what's interesting is you get married. You guys don't have a pot to piss in, right? And then not only do you decide to have two kids, you simultaneously decide to complete your undergraduate and then your graduate school. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah,
We had a kid before we had a car. We did not have a pot to piss in. We used to go through the couch cushions for food money.
Right.
I had two kids at 21, but I still finished my bachelor's degree at 23, and then I went on for my master's at 33.
That's incredible. That's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, and I remember I used to take both kids on the bus in Albany to my mother's house, and then walk down and get the bus out to SUNY and in all kinds of weather. And I mean, now people don't go three blocks without driving. So I think it kept me thin.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so your mother, the agoraphobia mother, is watching these two grandchildren now years.
Yeah.
So this is okay. So wow, this is incredible. And you're the oldest of five kids, and there was 14 years. No. How many years apart?
That's
between
right.
14 years between you and the youngest.
That's right.
God bless your mother.
My mother and the girl next to me in French class were pregnant at the same time. That made me one of the cool kids.
Did you borrow?
Yeah.
Did she borrow your baby name book, your mother's baby name book or something like that? So, that's incredible. I'm not going to say that's crazy, but, to the rest of the world, that sounds a little crazy. I mean, that's a long time. Your mother was agoraphobic, but apparently quite busy at home.
Well, I'm the oldest of five kids, and when I look back, she really, she had a lot of nervous problems and was on Valium and, but she kept it together for the kids. I mean, she did force herself to go out when she had to for, a ballet recital.
Right. Okay.
And
she's a good mom.
She was and still is a fantastic mother. And it's just, all my friends loved her. They thought she was so funny. But, I mean, agoraphobia is a really serious condition. And, we're all just so proud of her that she's been able to overcome it. And she's, if you met her, you'd never believe it.
Okay.
But,
so she's alive today.
Oh, yeah, she's only 78.
In Albany.
She's out in Idaho, Boise.
Oh, yeah, because everybody goes from Albany to Idaho with a girl.
Oh, yeah.
How did she end up in Idaho? I mean...
My stepdad is from Montana.
Oh, there you go, stepdad.
And he had family in Boise, and that's how they ended up there, and she loves it.
And she's conquered agoraphobia. She's out now.
Yeah. Oh,
that's fantastic. All right, great. And real quickly, I'm just picking out things, all these notes. I'm not a professional at this. There's a lot of interesting stuff. Your father, write about in the book, spent a lot of time on the toilet.
Well, this is true. It's funny because back then we had seven people in our house.
Yes.
And one bathroom. And it just seemed like that was the only place he could go for peace and quiet. We had a small house, but it wasn't particularly small back then.
Right.
But he was in the bathroom a lot.
Right. But sadly, is that true? He actually passed away on the toilet.
Just like Elvis.
Just like Elvis.
Yeah.
All right. After Elvis.
Years after Elvis. That's right.
Do you mind if I ask, how did that get discovered?
He had a heart attack.
Right. But who found him there?
My father's girlfriend. Yep.
They were
down in Florida, and they were in a hotel. They were on vacation, and he had a massive heart attack and died.
Oh.
And so then she went back to Albany with all his stuff, too. Mm. And every step of the way, the cab driver, and everybody would go, "Wow, you got a lot of luggage for one person," and she'd go, "Companion just died."
There you go.
So, but even like that, we can laugh at. And my father, if he was alive, he'd have a laugh over it too.
Absolutely.
Nothing sacred.
Okay, all right. So they're divorced. So this is interesting. Okay, the oldest of five. 14 years between you and the youngest. Your mother, agoraphobia. Your father, a funny guy, bus driver, you know, later on dies a heart attack on the toilet. Your parents are divorced. You got all these fantastic, believe it or not, to the rest of the world. Comedians know this, but you have all these fantastic ingredients for success. It's all like it's all coming together for you somehow, although life seems to be falling apart, right?
Well, you know, it's all together now, but at the time when I wrote that book, it really was a very sad time.
Sure.
You know, I adored my ex-husband, you know, the alcoholic, and I mean, we had such a good time together. We traveled.
You travel a lot. You travel a lot even with boyfriends before him. You're a nomad.
I like to travel. I do. I still do.
Is there a female conjugation of the word nomad? Because that's you. Your job is nomadic.
Yeah. I traveled for business.
Yeah.
That when I lived in Albany. And actually, that helped me because when I moved to Vegas by myself, I knew I could get around because I had traveled for business by myself so much that I thought, you know, I'll just make friends. I'll go places and I'll make friends just like I was on a business trip. I would always meet people, and that's how I met Bastard Husband. In the bar at the Marriott in Buffalo.
Right.
And so, you know, every experience that you have really does tie in to the next. You know, my training background, my writing background tied into doing comedy and tied into writing a book.
Right.
And what my book is that first year alone in Las Vegas, I had kept a journal because I really was so sad about that marriage falling apart. And I realized that a journal does not make a book, but I had a lot of details from that time, and I kind of made it into a memoir, weaving in the backstory about my life, the funny things. So my goal in writing Bastard Husband, a love story, was for other people to see that you really can start over at any age. You can start over. And my life now is just incredible.
Right. Well, yeah, you are. Well, yeah, we're going to pass. Listen, unfortunately, I screwed up at the beginning of the hour, but we are going to get close to wrapping up. But I'm totally not going to throw you off the air because you've made such an effort to be here. And I've made such an effort for you to be here, too. So I want to enjoy this as much as possible. There is a happy ending to all this because you have since done what?
Well, there's a happy ending. I want to say the book itself. It's a one-year period, and so when the book ends, there's still a lot. I mean, certainly a much better position than I was at the beginning, but things had yet to fall into place. I wasn't in a relationship. I didn't have a great job, but things were definitely more hopeful at that point. But since then, I remarried a year and a half ago, and my husband is awesome. I just pinch myself. We live in like a 4,000 square foot home, gated community with a built-in pool and a balcony with a view of the strip. And it's like, you know, coming from Lincoln Avenue in Albany, New York, to where we are now, it's just, I pinch myself.
Right.
And, you know, a few months ago I was doing a show at the Hilton, which is now the LVH, and I was waiting for our comedy show to start, and Rich Little had just finished his show, and it was between the two shows, and he came up, and I was sitting up in the balcony hanging out there, and, you know, he came, and he was just stuck up a conversation with me, and I thought, oh, who am I getting ready to go on stage at the Las Vegas Hilton, chatting it up with Rich Little beforehand? I'm like,
wow.
Who am I? What happened to Linda Haber from Albany, New York? It's crazy. But that's what I want people to know is that anything can happen. You just take your talents and you share them with the world. And that's the key.
Right, exactly. And listen, you had you actually had an interesting support group, you know, throughout. I love the term you guys use. You use trailing spouse. Because your husband, your bastard husband, was a professor at a college, right? A university or something. So you're the trailing spouse, and you go, and you have no problems, like, you know, starting up a yoga class that you'll teach, and you just set up shop. That's your nomadic part of you, that you're just so comfortable, you know, relocating. I mean, as a hardship as it was, everything that was going on, you were still able just to do that. You know, that's part of who you are and what you are.
Yeah. It really, again, every experience counts, you know.
Right.
Every experience folds into the next.
Right. You're still doing yoga now? I mean, you're teaching it, or?
I haven't been teaching yoga in a few years. I still do yoga.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm 55 now, and yoga is something you can do your entire life.
Sure.
And,
sure. And meditation, you know? Too, by the way, right?
Yes.
We're going to have to talk about that. I started yoga, but I need to talk to you about meditation.
It's all very cool stuff.
Yeah. You're a little bit metaphysical. Like you're into all that stuff.
I always have been. But you know what? I'm not like, you know, I'm a beer drinking yoga teacher. I mean, I like to drink beer myself.
Well, that's the class I want to go to. I'm sure that's a lot of guys. If you come back to Albany and do beer drinking yoga, you're going to sell out. You'll sell out to Pepsi. I'm telling you right now. So keep that in mind. I'm just tossing out ideas. Maybe it's not a good idea, but I think you know that what is that Shrami? What's that hot? That really hot yoga? Everybody's going to want to be.
Bikram yoga.
Yeah. So and you, I think you talk about that, right? That was one of the first things you did was that hot yoga. Right.
I feel like I could have a stroke doing that.
Wow. No, don't do that. Let me just read here a quick quote about what it was like to be with your bastard husband. Page 62. It's like he's holding the remote control on life, and I just react to whatever channel he wants to be on.
Yeah.
A lot of people can feel like that about a lot of things. That's scary. I mean, that's, you know.
It really, you know, I reacted a lot to him. That's true. And I have never been exposed to somebody with a drinking problem before. You know, like I say, I like to drink. I met him in a bar. But it took me a while. We were living in Wyoming. When I realized, oh my God, you know, this is really out of control. This is a problem. And I used to just say to him, well, just don't put the bottle to your mouth. You won't have a problem. Just don't have 12 beers. Just stop at 2.
Right.
You know, I was so naive about alcoholism and so.
But when you guys met, you were partying, but you were able to say, okay, well, that was today, and tomorrow's another day. But for him, he'd go to the store, get a pack of cigarettes, and he'd disappear for about 12, 15 hours.
Yeah. And you know, he never, I never believe he ever wanted to be like that. You know, we had a wonderful life, and I just think that it's bigger, alcoholism and drug addiction, any kind of addictions, whether it's food or alcohol or sex, their brains are wired differently.
Right.
And I feel really bad for anybody who struggles with that.
How's he doing now? Sober?
How is he doing?
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know. I hear from him, it's all good. But, you know, I don't have that much contact with him anymore. And since I got remarried, it's even less. You know, I might hear every couple of months. But
he's not remarried. He's not remarried.
He's not that I know of. I don't believe he is remarried, no.
And he's on the other side of the globe. So you're pretty safe.
He's in New Zealand.
Right. I have no idea where that is. But I know that's Australia's Canada, you mentioned in the book.
New Zealand. That's right.
Okay.
It's not too far from Australia. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Well, let me see here. I know you want to...